to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
Let's see. Today is August 2nd, 2026. We have our guest, Kathy Grindstaff, with us today. And since we haven't gotten our guest on the phone yet, we'll be talking about nothing momentarily. But free advertisement of the week goes out to our friend Robert Exter, who he's the magic behind making our free enterprise moments disappear from the show archives. He puts the show archives online for you. They're free to listen to. Oh, Dave's there. I'll stop maligning him. And anyway, he's a really good videographer. So if you live in the Reading area and you have an event coming up or you need photos or video or whatever. So Steve Hilton was here in Reading on Friday night. You can see the video at ShastaGOP.com. So it was a really good event, 250 people. We packed the house, could have sold more tickets, but it would have made the treasurer crazy, and we all know how that turns out. So it was great. Actually, he did a terrific job, and Robert got his remind me, Robert, like 30 minutes? 32 minutes, of course. Ask the guy who did it. 32-minute speech there, and so links you to his site at robertextra.com, but he's a super good artist. We've worked with him for years, and there's an interesting story about the Unabomber. It's on the website. You should look at it. It's like one of those, what? All right. So now I'm talking to Blue Streak. We're going to talk about marijuana today, so I should talk slower. Mm-hmm. Does it make people talk slower? Our guest is Dave Evans.
None other
than Dave G. Evans, Esquire. Senior counsel with Civil, C-I-V-E-L. That is Cannabis Industry Victims Educating Litigators. And he's in Flemington, New Jersey. Can't go wrong in New Jersey. They were my neighbors when I was a kid. Senior counsel for that who educates lawyers on how to make the marijuana industry accountable to their many victims. It's the one thing that really doesn't get discussed for the most part. We talk about all sorts of things, but not that.
Well, according to the marijuana people, there are no victims.
So, oh, God, I buried the lead.
There you go.
It's a good thing you were here, Kathy. What a dope. I'll put on my pointy hat and go sit in the corner. Attorneys who desire
no
more.
No pun intended.
Come on, there might have been a pun intended. Yeah, it's past noon, so we can, you know, we can move it at a faster pace. Otherwise, we'd have to apologize for taxing everyone's brain space. Attorneys who desire more information can contact Mr. Evans at seniorcounsel@civel.org. Needless to say, their website is civel.org. So before opening his law practice in 92, he was a research scientist and data analyst and at the epidemiology – darn it, I almost had it – services unit, Division of Alcoholism and Drug Abuse in New Jersey's Department of Health. So he didn't just, you know, go to law school and decide, oh, this would be snappy kind of cases to try. He has some background there. He analyzed legal and regulatory requirements regarding drug and alcohol abuse, research and data collection, courts, criminal justice, domestic violence, drug-free workplaces, juveniles, confidentiality, treatment, drug testing, AIDS, drug use forecasting, and discrimination.
And a partridge in a pear tree.
Right? I know. I know. And some other stuff that we'll save for later. But anyway, we wanted him to do most of the explaining today. So with that chaotic beginning, Dave,
what's going on?
Bring it down.
Well, greetings from New Jersey.
Love our New Jersey.
I certainly sound like I'm very well qualified.
You do.
Okay. So what would you like to know?
Well, go ahead, Kathy. Kathy took a big breath, and then I cut her off. I was a faster big breather than she was.
So this is, believe me, Cam and I follow you religiously, just so you know.
Oh, good.
And it is Sunday.
One of the things that came up in our area, and a local city just happened to adopt new marijuana laws to allow dispensaries and grow houses. And it's a college town. What could go wrong?
Well, a lot could go wrong. we have a town in New Jersey called Highland Park, and the town wanted to use the town name to draw customers into the marijuana stores.
Of course they did. Highland
Park.
Right.
Literally, that's what they wanted to do. So in a town of 15,000 people, they put in 5 marijuana stores. We call them marijuana trafficking stores. They call them marijuana dispensaries.
Now, we call them dope stores here.
Yeah, pot shops.
Yeah. Right. So the good thing about Highland Park is it happens to be just right across the river from Rutgers University. Okay. So in the town, in the year that they put these stores in, DWIs, driving while intoxicated, arrests went up 56%. 56%
yeah.
in the year.
Yeah.
Okay. There were all kinds of problems with the town, with traffic, more police involvement. The town council, who about half of them are marijuana users,
of course,
decided to ignore all of that. One of them, when my grandson's in the back seat of the car, so he may chime in every once in a while. So anyway, one of the members of the town council was a professor of political science at Seton Hall University in New Jersey. And when I was testifying against this before the town council, he gave me the finger. So that's the kind of stuff that goes on in towns
yep.
that have decided to become, marijuana cartel centers. All kinds of other problems come in. There are higher arrest rate. There's disorderly persons. There is a high degree of high potency marijuana in these places, and that leads to psychosis, more emergency room visits, more problems in the schools. In this particular town, the school did not want to give us information about marijuana-involved incidents because they didn't want to upset the town council. People came into the town and sold marijuana when they were not licensed to do so at farm market things. And so forth. And the citizens complained to the police and said, look, if somebody's selling, high potency marijuana here, they don't have the license. The cops said, well, we've been told to just ignore it. And so they were allowed to sell this stuff without the police interfering, even though it was illegal under the state cannabis laws. So that's the kind of thing that happens when a town gets completely taken over by these marijuana stores. What we find nationally is that the high-potency marijuana, which is legal in New Jersey, when it comes to anything over 40% THC, the state of New Jersey has decided that once it gets to 40%, that you have to give a warning that it might cause psychosis. Okay. So I wrote them a letter and I said, look, give me the name of any other product in New Jersey that at any degree causes psychosis and allowed to be sold. And as far as they were concerned, 40% was okay. And of course, psychosis can be caused at any amount or potency
right.
of marijuana.
Right.
We now have marijuana being sold in these dispensaries that's 85, 90, 95% THC.
Right.
Which most states permit that. There's no limit on it at all. People are going from first use into psychosis, especially young people, a remarkable number of them commit suicide in very dramatic ways. They jump off bridges, they jump off buildings, they step out in front of cars. These are all from actual cases.
Right.
That's come to our attention. They walk in front of trains. One kid shot himself in the head in his family living room, and he died in his father's arms. Now, the reason that these kids have been committing suicide is because their parents have said, look, there's something wrong here with your use of marijuana. You're obviously becoming mentally ill. You know, we'd like to help you get off of it. And the kids are choosing suicide rather than getting off of the marijuana. You know, they, for some reason, several of these cases, the kids on their way home, one kid walked out in front of a highway, killed himself. Another one went in front of a train. Another one jumped off a balcony in New York City. Rather than get off the marijuana. Now, what is different about marijuana than any other addictive drug? First of all, marijuana is highly addictive. The National Institute on Drug Abuse says that about 30% of the young marijuana users develop cannabis addiction, and that's higher than any other substance. But what is different about marijuana, is that it really takes over the person's, spirit, their emotions, their interactions. The parents describe the process as their child using marijuana, and the parents might say, well, you know, good, they're not using alcohol. Then the family begins to see that they are losing their child. The child breaks off contact with the family, emotional engagement with the family. Kids that were high performers in school start going downhill. The parents point out that the marijuana might be involved. The child says, no way, it's just a plant. It couldn't be the marijuana. That's not the reason why I've given up football, why I've given up piano lessons, why I'm no longer interacting with the family. It couldn't be marijuana. Then mental illness starts coming in, depression, psychosis, schizophrenia, and then the child is not even in touch with reality. They lose the child, either because the child commits suicide or dies in an accident or becomes psychotic. And some of them, when they stop the marijuana, if they're lucky enough to get into treatment, the psychosis can be reversed. Sometimes takes a long time. There are families now that are struggling with psychotic kids who stopped marijuana and they're still having problems even months or years afterwards. So we don't see this with other drugs. You get off of another drug, usually within a month, a couple of months, you're starting to get your brains back, you're in touch with reality. Now, I think the reason this happens with marijuana is that we have cannabinoid receptors all over our body. And so the cannabinoids in marijuana plug in all over the body and the brain and really completely takes over. And I'll give you an example. I was at a FDA conference on marijuana where they were considering doing something about it. They haven't done anything about it yet, but they were considering it. And there were a lot of people from the marijuana industry there, and there was a guy sitting in front of me who looked like an old hippie, and he had on an old baseball hat, and he was kind of beat up looking, and the thing that was remarkable about him is he had on a fluorescent green cape, like Superman, that had a big marijuana flower.
I would have noticed that, too.
Yeah, right. And so I started talking to him, and I said, well, how long have you been using marijuana? He said, oh, about 50 years. Huh. And he said, you know, and it hasn't done anything to me.
I was just going to say, and you said, gee whiz, I can hardly tell.
Yeah, exactly, right. So that is typical of what goes on. They become so involved in it that it becomes their life. It becomes their spiritual
It's a religion.
Connection. It becomes their social relationships and so forth. You see this also when you go to legislative sessions. I remember I went to one in New Jersey, and before people knew who I was, I just started going around the room, and the room was packed with people. And I went around and started talking with them. Virtually everybody was not from New Jersey. They had come in, they'd been bused in, or they had come in. And you don't see that with any other legislative session. okay? So it really impresses the hell out of legislators to see a room full of people that want this stuff, but they're not told that most of them didn't even come from the state. So they get a lot of, advocates. These people feel justified in doing anything to promoting marijuana. They think it's okay to lie. They think it's okay to threaten people. All of us that have been involved publicly in the anti-marijuana movement have received physical threats.
Yeah.
And I've had to call the state police, for example, because I received a threat that I thought was pretty realistic, and I called the state police. I had them contact the person, threats to my children and so forth. And they feel that they can lie, and it's okay. I'll give you some examples of some rather public lies.
Hold that thought, Dave.
Yeah.
And we're going to come right back. We've got to take a quick break. Our guest is Dave Evans. You are listening to We the People. You can find all of this and send the show to your friends at wethepeopleradio.us. No pot shop that has it in there either. That's not going to cure your disease, despite claims to the contrary. Back to you, Dave Evans.
Okay, well, the other thing about the reason I'm going into all this is because you have to understand the social movement behind legalization. It's driven by, taken by it, and people who have a commercial financial interest in it. So, two examples of people lying. There was a woman named Angel Raich who brought a case before the U.S. Supreme Court to be able to use medical marijuana. And she got on the steps of the Supreme Court and cried about how she had an inoperable brain tumor and the only reason she's alive today is because of marijuana. Well, we had hired a private detective to look into her past. And she'd been involved in several pieces of litigation where she had used her medical conditions to gain advantage. Angel Raich was the fourth name that she has been using. One of the doctors who we got her medical records, which she had, put into public, said that she had a somatoform disorder. And so she would tell people she had this somatoform disorder. And she had this inoperable brain tumor. Well, it turned out it's true. She had an inoperable brain tumor. She had a brain tumor that there was no reason to operate on it. She'd been dying from it for 11 years. And it just was a benign tumor. There was no reason to operate on
it. Best brain tumor ever.
It turned out that a somatoform disorder is the modern term for being a hypochondriac. Okay, somebody that takes physical illnesses. So once we exposed this to New York Times, Angel disappeared. We never heard from her again. Another example, there was a medical marijuana demonstration in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and a guy sitting in a wheelchair, and we have photographs of all this, with a sign saying that he can't take pills. In other words, he has to use pot, and he's in a wheelchair. So anyway, the demonstration gets over with, everybody leaves. We had a guy that hung around anyway with a camera. And there was a miracle, a medical miracle, because this guy got up from the wheelchair and walked away. So there
was
something about
an intent.
It was a miracle that participating in this medical marijuana conference so powerful it cured him on the spot and he could walk away from the wheelchair.
Well, they can put that on their list of ailments that it cures now.
Well, yeah, and when they were putting a medical marijuana bill in the New Jersey legislature, there were two medical marijuana patients there who had no problem walking. They had diseases that had nothing to do with their ability to walk. But the sponsors of the legislation had them sit in wheelchairs and then wheeled them into the legislative chamber in wheelchairs when they didn't need to be in wheelchairs. So this is the kind of hokey-pokey stuff that's going on. And then you have the marijuana industry, which blatantly lies about their products. It says that they are healthy, that they are medicine, that they can help with pain. All of the studies that have looked at marijuana as a pain reliever say, sorry, it just doesn't work. The mega studies, all the studies that have been done, and they get legislation passed that lists a whole bunch of ailments for which there is no convincing medical research showing that marijuana helps with any of those conditions. For example, glaucoma, virtually all the states allow medical marijuana for glaucoma because there was a study years ago that showed that marijuana reduced intraocular pressure, which is something that glaucoma causes. The Glaucoma Society has said, do not use marijuana. It can cause you to have damage to your optic nerve because you lower the intraocular pressure and then it raises again, and that can damage your nerve. So it can actually cause you to become blind.
Terrific.
But that doesn't get to the legislatures. This false study does. Now, the reason it gets to the legislatures is because the marijuana industry has a lot of money. For example, Trulieve, which is the biggest medical marijuana company, I think probably in the world, and they're based in Florida, spent $140 million to get marijuana legalized in Florida, and it failed. We could only raise $20 million. So there's just so much money. Now, President Trump, and I have been a supporter of President Trump. I was part of the legal team on Trump's behalf during 2020, but he has now completely gone off the rails when it comes to marijuana. He is being influenced by a guy named Howard Kessler. Kessler says, well, you know, I had cancer, marijuana helped me, blah, 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 blah. He's also being influenced by Trulieve. Trulieve donated $750,000 to his inauguration party. They have donated, the other marijuana companies donated millions to the PAC that Trump supports. So Trump's now a supporter of medical marijuana. What Howard Kessler has neglected to tell the public is that he was diagnosed with cancer in 2024. We found out that he started a medical marijuana company 4 years before.
Yeah.
And he's selling the products that Trump is now promoting. Now, it gets even worse. They want to give cannabis products to people on Medicare. And they would be able to get up to $500 a year, which would be not paid for by Medicare, but paid for Medicare organizations. The cannabis products that they're promoting, the CBD product, first of all, has never been tested on anybody over the age of 55. And the one CBD product that's approved by the FDA for seizures causes problems with your liver. So you have to have your liver enzymes monitored while you're using this product. Okay, so they want to give it to old people. Now, who is more likely to have liver problems? Of course, elderly people. This is probably going to kill a lot of elderly people. And the head of the FDA, Markey, who just got fired by...
I'm pretty sure it was Malarkey. Was he in the Biden administration?
Yeah, he got fired by Trump after he issued a letter saying that when it came to this Medicare marijuana scheme, that the FDA was not going to ensure that these products were safe and effective. The normal rules that they applied to any medication, they were not going to apply. Okay? So they're giving stuff that's not been proven to be safe and effective, that damages livers, has never been tested on anybody over the age of 55, and There is clear evidence that this product, these products interfere with other prescription medications. For example, if you're on blood thinners, this can cause you to bleed more. And Trump is allowing this to be given to people on Medicare. They can be up to $500 of it a year. So guess who's going to get the money? There's 60 million people on Medicare. 14 million would be eligible for this stuff. So if 1 million of them sign up for it, that's 1 million times 500. That's $500 million that's going to go to companies like Trulieve and Howard Kessler's company.
No fraud there. No fraud there.
No, that's not a bad thing, right?
Outrageous, outrageous, irresponsible, corrupt.
But Dave,
and I'm using corrupt accurately. Yeah.
So what I notice and have noticed for years on this is the people, whether you're speaking to them, they're your neighbors or friends, or whether it's on the big stage, like with Trump or whatever, the one consistent thing is the people that are the easiest to kind of bamboozle on this are either people who support it, so they're marijuana users, and so they support
right.
it, or people who really have never used drugs and alcohol, don't know anything right. about it, and really just
right.
have no context, and think it's harmless
right.
because all their information comes from Cheech and Chong movies in the 70s.
Right.
Right.
Oh, that's exactly right. And look, I smoked pot in college back in the 60s, and, you know, what I smoked back then was 2 or 3% THC. And trust
and it was
me,
mandatory,
so
I got
stoned on it. I got stoned on it. Now it's the leaf, the smoking, is up to 40% THC.
Right.
And the edibles are 85-95%. It's a completely different drug.
And on and just for people who don't know, we have done about a million shows on this topic, which you've probably already noticed, but we've done a bunch of shows on the chemicals that are used
yes.
on this that do not come off. And they were really
right.
only that was really a small percentage back in the day because
yeah.
they just weren't into the level of production, and getting chemicals from China was a little bit difficult. I mean, things were just different.
Right.
So the chemical interaction, it's not just the marijuana itself, but people who are deluded into thinking this is a farm-to-table natural
yeah.
organic product.
Yeah. It's
so much better than pharmacy because there's no chemicals in it. I'm like, okay,
yeah,
back to people that are high or people who are uninformed.
Yeah.
Right. Well, in terms of the chemicals, first of all, the cannabis plant takes up heavy metals from the soil. So heavy metals are toxic to human beings. And they come into the plant products, okay? Now, a lot of these products advertise laboratory reports, so you can get off their website. Well, the laboratory reports are probably accurate, but they only tell you the level of THC or other cannabinoids. They do not tell you about contaminants. And if you do research on the contaminants, you'll find heavy metals, mercury, all kinds of things like that are toxic to people. Plus, the method of extracting CBD often uses butane, to extract it. And again, they don't give you any reports on contaminants that could be actually in the products. And a lot of these lab reports also turn out to be phony. There was a big problem in California.
Lying.
Where the labs were giving false reports
yeah.
on the THC levels, and the pot users got all ticked off because they've been using this stuff for 20 years, and nobody told them that they were ingesting toxic chemicals.
Right.
So there's just a lot of corruption going on with this. The medical, we just had hearings with the DEA about this. If the DEA judge is even halfway fair, he's going to declare this. As not having accepted medical use. Now, the problem is the DEA judge is a judge for the DEA. He works for the DEA. Even if he comes back saying, do not use this, the head of the DEA, who is supervised by the Attorney General, can overrule it. And the Attorney General right now, Todd Blanche, another corrupt individual, is probably going to overrule them and just say that we disagree with this and go ahead with it. Blanche issued an order back in April declaring that all marijuana coming from state medical marijuana programs is being rescheduled to Schedule 3 because it has accepted medical use, because it's being used medically in the states. And he came out and said that they did a review of all these medical marijuana programs, and they all had, and this is the word that was used, robust protections for public safety. Total BS.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay?
Yeah.
Total BS.
Yeah.
They have no idea. The medical marijuana programs are not medical at all. And we did our own independent analysis of 10 states across the United States. And if they're full of holes, they're not medical. Anybody can get medical marijuana. In California, if you've got a hangnail, you've got dandruff, you can get it.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
We sent an undercover person into a medical pot doctor in Plattsburgh, New York. I was the undercover guy, and I had been treated for a spinal cord injury and for cancer, and I had my medical records with me, okay? So I sat down in the doctor's office. He walked in and said, okay, we're going to get you your medical marijuana card today. I mean, he literally said that to me without even getting a word from me.
Wow.
Okay? Yeah. And I told him that I had a spinal cord injury, and I had my medical records, and didn't even ask me for them, and he said, okay, well, we'll put you down. You know, you had cancer, and he said, I have to put something down in addition to cancer, so I'm going to put down that you had post-traumatic stress syndrome. I said, doctor, I don't have post-traumatic stress syndrome. He said, well, was having cancer stressful? I said, yeah. He said, I'm going to put down post-traumatic stress syndrome. So he put it into a sworn state affidavit form that he had swear to, perjury. I take it to the pot store, and I sat down with a guy, and I said, well, Dr. So-and-so gave me this recommendation and said that I had post-traumatic stress syndrome. I do not have post-traumatic stress syndrome. The guy said, ah, don't worry about that. We give that diagnosis to everybody. We had a mom in here the other day that had stress with her kids. We
so
gave
apparently
her
that's top secret.
Syndrome.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I said, no, thanks. I didn't want to do anything fraudulent. I just walked out. I've got all this. I've had a transcript of this whole interaction. I had a microphone on me the whole time, and, you know, that was it. That was it. It was a complete fraudulent transaction. And the doctor gave me a slip for me to get a discount on the pot at the local pot store, which is illegal under New York law. And this is the kind of stuff that's going on. The states do not monitor this stuff.
No.
We've seen similar complaints like this in New Jersey. We filed complaints. We had a pot store there that had an advertisement where that had two teenage girls in it. And they were not girls that sort of looked like they could have been 18 or 20. There was no doubt these girls were 14, 15 years old. Okay? So we sent this to the state and said, doesn't look like a good thing to be doing under state law. So the guy looked at the photograph, and I swear to God, he sent back an email and said, well, what is the problem with this photograph?
Wow. But you know what? I can explain that. I know why he couldn't figure it out. It's because he's been smoking pot and he messed up his vision. Boom.
Probably, yeah. So
made sense of the whole thing.
They are not monitoring these things
no.
at all.
No.
There is a no. state association of state marijuana agencies that gave a presentation in North Carolina, and I have this. Be happy to send it to anybody. They admitted they have no idea what they're doing.
Nice. Hey, would you send that to me and I'll put it on the page for today? That'd be super handy.
Sure, yeah, yeah. They gave a PowerPoint, and they admitted that they're lacking scientific basis for a lot of the stuff that they've been saying. This hearing before the DEA judge, the evidence was overwhelming.
Hold that thought, Dave, because I want to do that all in one thing without interrupting.
Okay. Right.
But we do want to get into that because I don't know that people are following that and they think it's kind of a foregone conclusion. I'd like you to give them your take there. So this is a shout out to the chemicals that are being used. And so if you think pot is great, here you go. You can find all of this at wethepeopleradio.us. Yeah. Soundtrack for the DEA hearing. So, Dave? Tell us more about the DEA hearing, and maybe for people who didn't even know there was such a thing, what is the 411 there?
Okay, well, normally when the government changes a rule, they have to submit it to the administrative process. That means they have to publish a draft rule. It has to be open for a period of time for the public to look at it and comment on it. And then they may schedule a hearing to receive evidence about the rule. And then they will issue a final rule. And then if you disagree with the final rule, you can take it into the federal D.C. Court of Appeals. So where we're at right now with this process is that the Attorney General legalized medical marijuana on the state level. He did so in violation of the administrative process. He violated the law. And so we have taken him to federal court. Okay, so that's being litigated right now. The Medicare program also, we have taken that to federal court. We have filed a lawsuit, and we're going through the litigation process. Now, the other thing the Attorney General did is he said when it comes to non-medical marijuana, we'll have a hearing. So at the end of June, we started the hearing. We had an 11-day trial where we were able to present evidence. Now, the DEA, and by the way, this is disgraceful, forcing the DEA to have to do this. They have always been against rescheduling. The current head of the DEA has been against it. Pam Bondi, who got fired by Trump, was against it. And we heard that the reason she got fired was because she wouldn't legalize marijuana.
No more introduction.
Yeah. So the hearing started off with the DEA presenting a witness from the Food and Drug Administration, who admitted, that the normal five-step process for determining medical use, had been, completed, and they had decided that marijuana did not meet the definition for medical use. However, under the Biden, Department of Health and Human Services, they got an order that they had to disregard their 30-year-old process for deciding accepted medical use, and they had to do a two-step process, they were ordered to do that. And the two-step process was designed so that marijuana would pass it. And that process is that there had to be people using it medically in the United States, and there had to be some medical evidence for it. So that means that clinical studies could be used, but not FDA-quality clinical studies, okay? So these could be slipshod, quack studies that they could use, and they were ordered to do it. And upon cross-examination, when he got finished, and he could have walked off the stand, this is after he admitted that he didn't pass the five-step process, he wanted to know if he could ask the judge a question. Everybody said fine. So then he went into a narrative that basically said, don't blame me for this. I was ordered to do this. And so the lawyer said, in other words, what you're saying is don't blame me for this mess. Okay. So the guy said, look, it's like the Nazis. Look, I was following orders. Okay. Don't blame me for this.
Terrific.
Okay. So yeah, that was great. It got even worse for them. Then they put in this pot doctor, who was supposed to testify about it being used medically around the country. He said, well, I only know about Vermont and New Hampshire. And he admitted that he makes recommendations for marijuana and then turns it over to the dispensary to decide the dose, the potency, the method of ingestion, and the time involved. And I said, but doctor, when I cross-examined, I said, aren't those medical decisions that should be made by a doctor? The dosage, the length of treatment, what product to use? And he said, well, I turn it over to the, in quotes, dispensary technician. Okay. Now, in other states, dispensary technicians are called bud tenders. They're usually marijuana users themselves, who talk about their personal experience with marijuana to these patients. Well, I went on the website of the one of the dispensaries that this doctor is responsible for, and I looked at the products, and they had names like Dante's Inferno, Blue Lobster, Girl Scout cookies. And so I said, "Doctor, tell me, for what medical condition would Blue Lobster be recommended for?" And he said, "Well, I don't know what you're talking about." And I said, "What about Girl Scout cookies and Dante's Inferno?" He did not know that these products, which could be used, and he admitted they could be used for medical as well as recreational, had those names. And I, you know, that he admitted that he leaves all these medical decisions to these bud tenders. So this is the kind of stuff that's going on all over the country. Okay? So he wasn't a very good witness for them. So then we ultimately presented a person from the DEA who came in as our witness. Now, this is a person, a doctor, who had been a prior DEA witness when they started this hearing back in 2024. The hearing got canceled, and then it got restarted. The DEA resisted us having this DEA employee come in as a witness, so we subpoenaed her. The court upheld the subpoena, and we brought her in. This was a doctor, a pharmacist physician, or doctor, PhD in pharmacy, who ran the evaluation unit in the DEA that provides the scientific information on drugs for the DEA, okay? And she said that there is no grounds under medical, accepted medical use for use of these products, okay? There was an 8-part test that they used to determine the scheduling. She said it does not meet the criteria for Schedule 3. They're trying to move it from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3. It did not meet the 5-part test. It didn't meet any test. And she completely eviscerated everything that the president, the attorney general, the head of the DEA, and the DEA lawyers were saying. Okay? Completely destroyed their case. Okay? And I sent an email to the DEA lawyers, and I said, "Look, I'm an employment law lawyer. I know a whistleblower when I see one. If you do anything to this woman because she told the truth and acted ethically, I'm going to make sure she gets legal representation." She was a hero, okay? And you could see when she was asked questions that she knew was going to be damaging to the DEA, she would stop for about 30 seconds. And you could see her going through her head thinking, "Do I tell the truth or do I protect my career?" And she told the truth every single time. She was heroic, heroic. She stood up to the president, the attorney general, the head of the DEA, and all of the pot companies, okay? Then we had other people come in and testify. We had the leading doctor on medical marijuana in the entire world, Dr. Finn. He wrote the big, large treatise on medical marijuana, or he edited it. He completely destroyed their case, and it went on from there. Now, it gets even worse, because it turns out we had the Alcohol and Drug Testing Organization come in and testify. It turns out that under federal law, we can only do marijuana testing for Schedule 1 and Schedule 2 drugs. Now, what do I mean by marijuana testing? All of the Department of Transportation testing for people in safety-sensitive positions, okay, is governed by testing only for Schedule 1 and Schedule 2 drugs. If you use marijuana down to a Schedule 3, there is no longer legal authority for marijuana testing for airplane pilots, train engineers, school bus drivers, air traffic controllers, all kinds of safety personnel for pipelines, maritime, you name it. No more marijuana testing. That's it. It's over with. Now, the reason that we started this testing was because of the tremendous atrocities that were committed by people high on marijuana. Trains running into each other head to head. Because the drivers were stoned on pot, and other things like that. That's what started all the federal transportation testing, was because of marijuana. Hundreds of people were killed during those events. And that is not going to take place anymore. The administration has known about this for a couple of years, because when they first proposed this, the people in the transportation department went to them and said, hey, marijuana is going to stop testing. Do something about this. The administration knows about this. The White House knows about this, and they've done nothing to correct it. So what that means is that the marijuana companies do not want testing for marijuana anymore, and President Trump and the Attorney General are going along with that. Because they don't want testing for marijuana.
So do you foresee a huge potential liability for these employers?
Because, of course.
I mean, my God.
Of course, but not even a liability for the employers. What about all the people that are going to be killed?
Yep. Okay. Yeah.
In these train accidents, and do we really want school bus drivers to be able to be high on marijuana and not do anything about it?
So, but individual employers can't adopt rules that say, no, we are going to test for it.
They can do that. That's correct.
Okay.
But are they going to in all circumstances? We have some employers that have stopped testing for marijuana because of pressure from the marijuana industry, and also because they can't find employees that have not been using marijuana.
But then wouldn't they get also pressure from their insurance carriers saying, holy hell, we're not going to cover you if you're not testing?
You would think so. You would think so. But can we guarantee that in all circumstances?
No. Yeah.
Could we, do you want to get on an airplane or do you want a school bus? Have your kids put on a school bus where there's not? This is mandated testing, okay? They're forced to do it. And they can then fire the employee. They can take their commercial driver's license away. With truck drivers, they may not be able to do that anymore because the testing is now illegal. And people that are tested can sue and say, well, you can't do this anymore. You're not allowed to test me anymore. And you can't blame me for this because my use of marijuana was completely legal, and it was okay by the Department of Transportation.
Besides that, I have hangnails and eczema, and I need it.
You're exactly right. Now, since they've had this marijuana testing in place, there has been no marijuana-related incident where there's been any kind of death. So it has stopped for 30 years. Stopped. As soon as this testing was put in, and it's going to start up again.
Dang. Well, we're into the last 30 seconds of this hour, but we have you as our hostage. sounds like you're in your car, so I hope you have another hour of drive time. The rabbit hole goes deep, but at the very least, it kind of ends with money. What I'd like to know next hour from you is the mechanism of Schedule 3. It's the same as Tylenol with codeine. Now it's going to be prescribed by a kid at a dope store, so that makes no sense to me whatsoever because you can't even quantify the amount. So we're going to come right back and learn all about that with our guest, Dave Evans. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Kundiff.
So today is August 2nd, 2026, and we are here with our friend Kathy Grindstaff, who is sitting in for herself and our friend Officer Joe, because he was otherwise engaged. He's on location.
We should have made him call
in. We just don't know what location. He's on some location. And we have our friend Robert Exter with us today. So it's kind of fun. We're not just sitting here talking to ourselves.
No.
Our guest is Senior Counsel for CIVL. That is the Cannabis Industry Victims Educating Litigators. His name is Dave Evans. David G. Evans, as a matter of fact. And he's an all-around smart guy on this topic.
Oh,
he has done a ton of research, got a long history of dealing with all this stuff. And I just, I guess, you know, we're into the DEA hearing and the rescheduling and all that good stuff. But, Dave, why is it, we've spoken with, you know, the pharmacist, Phil Drum, and I think he's back on in a couple of weeks. We've talked to them about all this. So here you have a product that you can't really adequately quantify the strength of. And it's now going to be in the same category with drugs like Tylenol with codeine and things that you have to have a prescription for, tracked. So I couldn't get a script here and then go to Oregon and get another one and another one. It would all pop up in a database. How is this going to fit into that category?
But we're only talking medical marijuana. So
sorry, still,
well, here's the
how does that fit in?
Here's the problem with the prescriptions.
Yeah.
Last April, when the Attorney General legalized it and said basically marijuana coming out of its face.
Oh, no. He was attacked by the cone of silence. Wait, the cone of silence got you. The Attorney General, Attorney General said what?
The Attorney General, back in April, said that he is moving medical marijuana that comes out of a medical marijuana dispensary on the state level. He's moving all that marijuana to Schedule 3. Okay, because he claimed that the states have this robust system for protecting patient safety, which they do not.
Mm-mm.
He also did that in violation of the administrative process. What he did was illegal, and we're taking him to the court. This is what he also said. There are DEA rules, laws, governing the process of issuing prescriptions and also of labeling medical products, controlled substances. He told the states in this order that you no longer have to obey those rules. Okay? So when it comes to any other Schedule 3 drug, you have to obey the prescription rules and you have to obey the labeling laws. But when it comes to marijuana as a drug, you don't have to obey those laws anymore. He put that in the order. Okay. So what does that mean? Well, under the prescription laws of the DEA, you have to put in, when you write a prescription, you have to put in the dosage, ingestion method, and other information about the drug. You don't have to do that anymore. You only have to put in the patient's name and the date, and that's it. So, and then when it comes to labeling, he said, there are about 15 things that have to be considered in labeling a medicine. For example, when you open up a package insert, when you've got a prescription drug, there's a whole list of things that you get information on. Well, he said you don't have to do that anymore when it comes to marijuana.
Is that really a thing? I mean, can we do that?
He did it.
Right?
He did it. Can he do it legally? No, he cannot do it legally. Okay? But there's a lot of things that Trump does that are later overturned by the courts. So this is just another one of his things that he's throwing out there in hopes that it'll pass. He can't do that. He can't change those laws without going through the administrative process. That's the law. He broke the law. So now you can pretty much do whatever you want when it comes to marijuana. You don't have to obey any of the federal rules. If the state says it's okay, it's okay. Now, he said, you know, if the state rules about recommending the drug, you can use. Now, the problem is that those state rules are different in every state. You don't have to write a prescription. You have to write a recommendation. You may or may not have to do a thorough evaluation of the patient. You may or may not have to do dosage, none of that kind of stuff. Every state's got different rules. And he said, I don't care about that. You can just go ahead and do it. You do whatever you want on the state level. And you don't have to do anything about labeling. So that means that if the product causes psychosis, as far as I know, no state requires that be put on the label. So you don't have to do it anymore. Now, what are the problems connected with this not having all that information? Well, the DEA, the FDA has a responsibility. Congress said they have to publish information about prescription drugs, and that information has to be available to doctors. That information does not exist for marijuana. It is not there, okay? The doctors no longer are going to have information available to them to make these decisions. So, for example, with drug testing, when a drug test comes back positive, it has to go to a doctor who is called a medical review officer, and the doctor has to verify that it is, in fact, a valid prescription. How's the doctor going to do that now? There's no information for the doctor about that. Normally, the doctor would go to the pharmacy to verify the prescription. Now the doctor has to go to a pot dispensary and talk to a bud tender and get the. I mean, this is beyond criminal and reckless, and this is exactly what they're doing.
Keep left to stay on I-78 West.
You know where you are.
Keep
left. I think you better stay to the left. Get on I-78 West.
Yeah, and I have read this over and over because I just could not believe it. I couldn't believe that they were being so reckless and criminal, but they're doing it. And everybody who's looked at it agrees with me. Said, yeah, they're doing it. So it's now up to the Federal Court of Appeals in D.C. to decide this issue. Hopefully, they'll keep the case in and they'll decide it. But it's been a blatant violation of the law. And they don't seem to give a damn.
So with your personal opinion, because there's a lot of people in the drug prevention business or, you know, that we work so hard keeping our kids off drugs, a lot of them are just becoming resigned. Like, oh, it's just going to happen.
It's just going to happen.
It's just going to happen. There's nothing we can do about it. Are you seeing more of that? Because I'm not resigned. I will fight this to my death.
First of all, in some cases, they're forbidden to do anything about it. The White House talked to the drug czar's office, who has a responsibility to protect the public, and told them not to have any discussions about this. In states where the prevention dollars are controlled by the states, they're afraid to speak up. That's New Jersey, New York, for example. I have talked to people there. They said, we're not speaking up against it. We don't want to lose our grants. It's a real problem. Pueblo, Colorado, the school board there, forbade the schools from saying anything about marijuana that was bad. We have towns that have been taken over by the marijuana industry. And so the word is going to get, but is it hopeless? No. When I was a kid, there were advertisements for doctors advertising cigarettes. Saying that they calm the throat, you could lose weight. 5 out of 10 doctors recommend Lucky's.
And they were in their lab coats. I mean, the ads have them.
In their lab coats. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I went to a military academy in Virginia when I was 13 years old. They sold cigarettes to us in the student canteen. That would be impossible today.
Well, we used to put them in the ration boxes for the military
their
soldiers.
When I went through basic training, we all got cigarettes in our sea ration box.
When I was in high school back in the late 80s, there was a smoking area for students.
Right. So, what do you see today? What do you see today with tobacco? I personally don't know anybody that smokes cigarettes.
Yeah, you don't see it. Yeah, you don't see it very much. But
no, not at all. You don't hear if everybody's smoking.
But how many years it took us to get to that point? Are we going to survive the next 30 years?
Well, how did we get to that? How did we get to that point? We got to that point by education by the tobacco people, who were heroic. I mean, they spent decades. They endured all of the punishments that we're now enduring from the marijuana industry. They were from tobacco companies. And finally, the government took them to court. And the tobacco smokers took them to court, and that's what changed the thing. So we have given up on the government to do anything about this.
Right.
The government is too corrupt when it comes to this. So now we're going towards litigation. That's why I formed Cannabis Industry Victims Educating Litigators. We help lawyers sue the marijuana industry. We were involved in filing of class action lawsuits recently against four of the top marijuana companies. That covers 14 states, actually maybe 15 states. We went after Curaleaf, Verano, and two of the other big marijuana companies. We got other companies in our sites that we're going to go after. We have personal injury lawsuits going right now. The minute that somebody makes a big judgment, gets a big judgment from one of those lawsuits, you're going to see every lawyer and his or her mother filing lawsuits, just like what happened with tobacco.
Right.
And by the way, the companies, the law firms that are doing these class action lawsuits, companies that did the class action lawsuits against tobacco, they see that there is legitimate reason to file these lawsuits now.
Right.
So I think that's what's going to happen. People that are the victims are going to come forward. There's going to be some big judgments that are going to be then, and then they're going to face a lot of economic problems. What the marijuana companies are doing right now are violations of the federal criminal law. They're engaging in wire and mail fraud in their advertising. That is a criminal offense under federal law. They can be sued under RICO, the racketeering criminal law, federal law, and our lawsuits have RICO claims. And that's how they got to tobacco companies. That was illegal to sell tobacco, but they were engaging in false advertising about their products. And engaging in wire and mail fraud, saying that their products were safe. That was fraud.
Well, the other,
and that's a criminal act.
The other part of it that, well, to go back to cigarettes, I mean, one of the big catalysts, I think, was that it became socially unacceptable and people became kind of demonized, which I don't know if I'm a big fan of that whole program, but, you know, the canceling, that was really the first big canceling. Oh, he's a smoker. And I remember when we were employers, it's like somebody came in for an interview and they were a smoker and it was like, oh, brother, breaks every 5 seconds. And then, you know, the stench of cigarette smoke taking up the office.
Right.
And of course, you didn't get to bring that up, but that was a consideration. I'd be lying if I said it wasn't, and I'm sure it happened a lot. But the other little piece of this is a lot of these people growing the dope are criminals.
Yeah.
It isn't even just the selling of it and the advertising and the da 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 da. It's the cartels and like up where we are. ACLU is defending them and advocating for their water rights and
they drop the case?
Not really, no, they got paid.
Well, the ACLU gets a lot of money from George Soros and other organizations to work towards legalizing all drugs.
Sure, because how do you unwind society, right? Let's unwind it with that. So let's take a really quick break and come back, but I do want to get into more of your legal work and kind of the trajectory that it's on. I'm real curious.
I want to hear something positive.
Oh, Kathy, we're saving that for the end.
I can tell you about some wins that we've had.
Oh, okay. Kathy can be happy.
So
hey, I got a song for Kathy. Coming
right
up. Here, Kathy, this one's for you.
Wow! I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. So good, so good. I got you. Wow, I feel nice.
sugar and spice. I feel nice.
All take a deep breath. Okay.
So,
what do you think?
I can
Dave?
Drive up until it gets dark. So, you'd have to do all the driving all night. Yeah, okay.
I love driving at night. I'm so sad I'm so far away. I would drive. Love driving.
Well, we're in Pennsylvania right now. And we have to drive down to North Carolina. I live in Asheville now. So, we're just having a debate on whether to do that or not.
Well, ask that lady who keeps talking in the background, telling you where to go. What does she think?
Well, that's my daughter. So
no, the automated directions lady.
Right. My daughter's driving right now, so I'm putting her in control of setting our agenda for the rest of the evening.
Wow, atta guy. Let her go.
Yeah, well, she's pretty smart.
That's good. I remember my dad let me drive. I love driving. Shout out to the daughter.
Right.
Hold the wheel. So what do you think about the future, like on the litigation? Is the litigation kicking in? I mean, initially it was like, I think it was kind of novel. Now it's not quite so novel anymore?
It's still novel. What you need to understand is litigation takes a long time.
Sure.
Lawsuits that get filed, there may be nothing for a year or 2 years or even 3 years. So we're at the phase right now where there's been litigation filed but has not been resolved yet.
Okay.
We have a law firm in California that is specializing now in representing children who have become psychotic because of that. Now, I spoke at a mass tort lawyers conference in Nashville a few months ago. The attorneys that were with me told all the attorneys, they said, within a year or two, you're all going to be marijuana lawyers. The legal profession has now formally recognized this. The American, Association for Justice, which used to be called the Trial Lawyers Association, has now formed a cannabis injury litigation group. Okay, so they have now recognized for all the personal injury lawyers, the trial lawyers, that this is something they need to pay attention to. So that is very hopeful. I've worked for years to get that to take place. And tobacco lawyers are now hot on the trail right now. The marijuana industry are selfish, brutal and ruthless to attack them, and that's the trial lawyers. They're not afraid of anybody, okay? They'll go after anybody if they think that there's a good case and they can make money. Yeah. And these mass tort lawyers are used to taking on big corporations. They're not afraid of them. They're not afraid of the government. They're not afraid of anybody. They have a lot of courage. We're at that phase right now where everybody has just gotten awake. They're seeing the opportunities out there, and they're starting to work on it. Now, we've had some wins. We had a case in New Jersey regarding these hemp products that are just as dangerous as regular marijuana products. We had a professional athlete who I represented, who had gotten into the hemp products, became psychotic, was being brought home to go into treatment, decided that the FBI was following them. He jumped out of the car, jumped off a bridge. He is now no longer able to be a professional athlete because of his injuries. So he still suffers from the psychosis to some degree, still thinks that the FBI is after him. But he's healthy enough that he's gotten a job now as a coach, and he's doing very well. But he lost out on being a professional athlete. So we brought the matter to court. The defendants filed a motion to dismiss for failure to state a claim. The judge was very hesitant. When we argued the motion, he said, you know, normally you let the proponent of the motion speak first, but he didn't do that. He talked to me first. And he said, Mr. Evans, he said, has anybody else ever litigated this type of case? Have there been any judicial decisions? And I said, no, Your Honor, this is the first. And what he was basically asking me is, why should I stick my neck out for these guys? Nobody else has done it. So I wasn't sure what he was going to do. Well, he came back with an opinion backing us up 100%. Okay, I could not have written a better opinion myself. Okay, and he said, yes, they had a duty to warn people about this. They didn't do it. This is product liability, and the case is going to go forward. They filed more motions to dismiss, which he did not uphold. I've now turned this over to another lawyer because I'm trying not to be personally involved in litigation anymore. I'm 78. I don't have the energy anymore to do this. So that was a clear win. It got a lot of publicity. The insurance industry wrote a whole article about it. And that was the win. Then we had a family in New Jersey where the town council conspired with a marijuana grow operation to put a marijuana grow operation right next to their house, okay? 15 greenhouses, okay?
Wow.
And as you're well aware, marijuana growing stinks to high heaven.
Oh, man.
It smells really bad.
Yeah.
So we sued them under RICO. They hadn't done anything yet. They had just applied for a license. So the judge on the RICO thing. But the minute they start doing something, the RICO is going to apply. So the grower moved on. And the town agreed to not put in any marijuana places anywhere near them anymore, respect their privacy. That was a clear win under a RICO decision. It's a very well-written opinion. So basically the grower read the opinion, said the minute we start putting up a greenhouse, boom, we got a RICO case. Now, the advantage of RICO cases are that you get triple damages. If you've been damaged in your property, let's say the value of your house went down $100,000, you can get $300,000 damages and your attorney's fees paid, okay? So RICO is a very effective tool that we can use. And every single marijuana dispensary in this country is engaging in marijuana racketeering under RICO and can be sued under RICO if you're damaged in your property. Now, you can't sue because of personal injury, like, you know, the fact that you became sick from marijuana. But if you lost your job or you lost property value, you can sue. Another case hit the United States Supreme Court that I was involved in. This is another big victory, where a truck driver used CBD and was told there was no THC in it. He tested positive for THC, he sued under RICO. Initially, the federal court said, nah, you know, this is a personal injury case. It's fraud. You can't just sue because you lost your job due to a personal injury. The U.S. Supreme Court said, no. If a personal injury causes you financial damage, you can sue under RICO. So because he was damaged by the personal injury of fraud and lost his job, you can sue under RICO. That is now the law in the entire country. So that's another big win. So that anybody damaged, you lose your job because of marijuana, you can sue under RICO. And we have a case in New Jersey that we're going to go forward where a guy lost his job because of psychosis caused by marijuana. And he can file a RICO claim. So there's a lot available to lawyers. There's a lot available to people who have marijuana grow operations that are affecting the value of their property. what we did with these people in New Jersey is we got an expert opinion from a realtor saying, yeah, there's no doubt that having this place with an 8-foot-tall barbed wire fence around it with 15 marijuana grow operations is gonna tank their property value. Their property's not going to be worth crap, and you know they're going to lose value in their property, and you can sue. And there's been another RICO case where loss in property value in Colorado was upheld as a reason to go forward with a RICO. But we're still in the beginning stages of all this. You know, we're with this where we were with tobacco, maybe in the late 1960s or the 70s, where these lawsuits were just coming up. People were getting used to them. The value of the lawsuits is they have a tremendous educational impact on people. People find out about it. For example, look at the transitioning surgeries where kids are being transitioned by surgery. There was a case recently in New York where the surgeons were successfully sued for this. And all the other doctors read this and say, okay, I can't be doing this anymore because I can get sued. So that's what's going to ultimately happen. Where the insurance companies, we've sent letters to all of the big insurance companies about this, telling them not to give these people insurance. We're trying to deny them banking. We're going to the financiers of the marijuana industry, telling them, look, this is the risk that you're running with this. Going on Wall Street, Trulieve just got on Wall Street, I think, I can tell you that I have no doubt that Trulieve is going to get sued. I have no doubt about that. I can't discuss that any further, but I will tell you they're going to get sued big time. So it's going to have an impact, and we have to look at what happened with tobacco. I mean, people don't smoke cigarettes anymore. Everybody got the word because of these lawsuits. And the marijuana industry is following their playbook. And the same thing that happened to tobacco is going to happen to marijuana, except it's going to be worse because we're going to have a lot of teenage kids with psychosis. Right. And those are going to be very, very attractive to juries when they find out about the really terrible things that the marijuana industry's been doing.
Yeah, I'm kind of wondering too. Like on the, let's say there's lawsuits that go through on these guys. When you hit the big players like that, does that catapult us toward a tipping point, or is that just seen as, hey, all the little guys can get away with it? The big guys are always out front taking the shots. I mean,
I think what's going to happen, first of all, there are a lot of little guys selling tobacco, and still are. But tobacco sales have gone down. The cost of tobacco has skyrocketed because of all the taxes that are put on it. It's going to have an impact all over the place. If anybody is insured that has insurance, they're a target. They can be sued. Even a mom and pop grocery store could be sued. It's gonna have that kind of ultimately an impact. What we're after really is stopping people from using the drug.
Right.
Once they see how really dangerous it is. And the biggest problem we have is that people don't see it as being dangerous because their personal experience with marijuana back in college wasn't that bad. I can't say that marijuana ever harmed me tremendously. I smoked it several times. I got high. And most people that are now in the positions of power, people my age or 10 or 20 years younger, did not experience the high potency marijuana that is out there now. And so they have a different opinion about it. When you talk to people about medical marijuana, they all think that it's medical.
Right.
They agree with that. But then when you show them the facts, they say, I didn't know that.
And there's no difference. That's what I try to tell the kids.
Yeah.
Explain to me the difference between medical and recreational.
And I'm sorry, but when was the last time your doctor told you to go smoke something?
Yeah.
Like never.
Right.
I cannot lie.
No,
I did not exhale.
No, there is no medicine is smoke.
Yeah.
And the reason you can't smoke something is you can't titrate the dose.
Right.
Everybody has
right.
different lung capacity.
Right. Yes.
And if you're going to smoke it and you want to have a 24-hour effect, you're going to have to stay up all night smoking. And you can't do that.
It's just, it's one of those things where we're at a point where we either, you know, fly off the cliff with Thelma and Louise or start pumping the brakes on this, because it has just gotten into everything.
Yeah.
And the effect on the youth is unbelievable. The blind eye from the adults and the complicit access from adults is
well,
mind blowing.
And even though, you know, the government in their I don't want to even say their smartness, but leaving so much of this up to individual communities and states, we don't have the capacity to even enforce anything that we adopt. So,
right.
I mean, it's like, what do you do?
Well, you keep working on it is what you do. You don't give up. I mean, I look at it this way. I stopped smoking back in 1978 because I came to believe what the anti-tobacco people were saying. Okay? They probably saved my life. Because I started smoking when I was 10. Started smoking on a regular basis when I was 13, okay? And when I stopped smoking, I was smoking and inhaling cigars. Had I kept doing that, I'd probably be dead by now. So I owe those people a debt. They worked on this for decades, fearlessly, and endured unbelievable abuse. And I owe them for that. I owe people who endured abuse to get seatbelts, got rid of lead in paint, got rid of lead in gasoline. For all those pioneers and heroes, for public health, people that fought against bacteria, for, you know, wanting to have doctors wash their hands, Louis Pasteur, all those people, we owe them a debt. Now it's our turn. Now it's our turn to step up to bat and do what needs to be done. Okay?
Yeah.
It's a duty we all have. I have chosen this duty because my life has been directed towards this. Everything that I've done in my life is focusing down to this moment to prepare me for what I'm doing now. I'm just stuck with it. But people should not give up. They should continue advocating with their public officials, speaking out against it, just like the other people did in the past. They never gave up. You know, they knew they were right. They knew that ultimately if they kept fighting, it would turn around. And it did. It did turn around.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy that fought against leaded gasoline, you should hear what they did to him. Good Lord. I mean, he was in Antarctica, and they scheduled a hearing in Congress purposely because they knew he was away in Antarctica. The son of a bitch flew up from Antarctica to go to the hearing. Okay? Mm-hmm. That's what it takes. That's what it
is. Dave gets spicy. We have to take a quick break here. We're going to come right back with our friend Dave Evans. Amazing info. You can find it all at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Might as well be me. Yeah, might as well be me.
Thanks, Dave, for volunteering to have it be you, because somebody does have to fix this crap. Hey, one thing we were talking about here in the studio during the break, there is a common misperception that marijuana has to be rescheduled so that they can study it.
That's what we did, too.
Hey, come on, I said that with a straight face.
That is a complete and utter lie.
Yes, how big a lie is it?
It's a huge lie. The National Academies of Sciences in 2017 did a very comprehensive report on marijuana. They studied 10,000 studies. In 2017, there were 10,000 studies about marijuana. Since then, there have been hundreds, if not thousands, more studies. The American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists studied this last year. They came out, and they're a politically liberal organization. They came out and said there is no reason why any pregnant woman should use marijuana. No reason. No medical reason, no other reason. Do not use it. Okay? The Heart Association came out saying, I think that was last year also, that use of marijuana increases your risk of cardiac injury by 25%.
Oh, wow.
Now, think about this.
That's a lot.
Think about this. If there was anything that raised your chance of having a heart attack by 25%, I think most people would stop doing it, or it would get more publicity.
Unless Dr. Fauci told you it was good.
There's been mega studies done on pain, saying it's not a good pain reliever. There are studies all over the place about psychosis. The American Psychiatric Association says don't use it. There's no mental health treatment that it should involve marijuana. It only makes mental health worse. The Veterans Administration says do not use it for post-traumatic stress syndrome. That's another thing they say that it's helpful for. They say no, it can cause veterans to become violent. It can make post-traumatic stress syndrome worse. We've studied it. The state of California, Pot Central, their environmental department looked at a whole bunch of studies and said that marijuana smoke is a carcinogen under Proposition 65. That's California says that, okay? There have been lots of studies. It is not that hard to get marijuana to study, and we encourage it. But I don't know where these 10,000 studies came from that are so hard to get. I don't know where the obstetricians came up with their studies. The heart people came up with their studies. These are all recent studies that have been done on marijuana. And the conclusive opinion is it's not a good medicine.
None of those studies, I mean, with numbers that are that high of the research, it isn't like 80% of the studies said that it's not medically advised. 100% of the studies were unable to prove medical benefit.
Good studies, yeah. Now, there's studies that have come out that are not very good studies. They're done on small populations.
Right.
They do not use double-blind, research. Where you use a placebo and then the actual product, they're slack science, they're junk science. Same thing was done with tobacco. The tobacco people created the Tobacco Institute to do research on tobacco, and they said, no, hey, tobacco's fine. It ain't gonna harm you. It's not addictive. I mean, I saw the heads of the tobacco companies testify before Congress. Each one of them, one right after the other, said that nicotine is not addictive.
Oops.
I mean, they said that in public.
Yeah.
I mean, it's ludicrous. Ludicrous. And so, there's studies saying that it's medicine, but you got to sit down and, look at the details. Was this done on 25 people, 10 people? Were they marijuana users before? What level of marijuana did they use and so forth? When you look at the mega studies that have been looked at a whole bunch of studies, and come up with the conclusion Those are the ones that you should trust. And the FDA does not use sloppy studies. When you do a clinical study under the FDA rules, and there's a federal law that says what those studies have to be comprised of, marijuana has not met the test. It's not there.
If their studies, see, the funny part is, right, on the one hand, we have to reschedule it to Schedule 3 so we can study it, but they've got studies that supposedly are good that they tout, but they don't admit that they have any studies when they want to reschedule it, because basically all the studies show
that it's bad. Like,
right. So they're saying we need to study it, but yet it should go to a Schedule 3 when we haven't done any studies on it.
Right.
It's completely illogical.
Yeah, yeah. Both those things cannot be true simultaneously.
Right. Exactly. Exactly right.
Huh.
But people should not give up. I mean, they want you to give up. They want you to think it's inevitable. And it's not.
Yeah. No.
It's not. I mean, the marijuana industry now is a big aircraft carrier, and we are all little tugboats. And we get enough tugboats, we're going to turn that aircraft carrier around.
I like it. I am curious to know if you do, is most of your legal work on this based on harm? What about the things like the grows up by us that are harming actual neighborhoods and all those things? And, you know, and you have the ACLU claiming that these people are just farmers and they need water and, you know, all that nonsense. Do you get involved in those?
Those would be RICO claims. And, you know, again, this is a resource issue. The ACLU gets paid by Soros to do this.
Right.
They have funding to do this. Our funding right now, and by the way, none of our funding comes from pharmaceutical companies. It all comes from families that are wealthy, that are concerned about this issue or have addicted children. There's not a dime coming into our litigation from any corporation. Got a financial interest in it. But right now we're focusing on primarily the anti-government stuff. We're going to leave it up to the private, personal injury lawyers to do the personal injury cases. And they'll probably take them on a contingent basis, which means that, the client doesn't pay, anything unless the lawyer wins. And my understanding is that's the cases that are going on right now. For example, that one with the professional athlete is a contingent. We were able to show that he has lost $800,000 in money that he could have earned as a professional athlete. And that's enough money to make these lawyers, interested in it, because they'll get a third of that. And that's a minimum, $800,000, a minimum.
Nice. On the federal level, what's the next? So now they've had all this. You guys, I mean,
the hearings, all this.
The hearing has all happened. Are we waiting for the decision, and then
on the Medicare lawsuit? Yeah, we filed the lawsuit in the Medicare case. We're waiting for the court to assign a briefing schedule where we submit briefs. On the Attorney General's order in April, where he legalized the medical marijuana, the same situation. We're waiting for a briefing schedule. With the hearings, the hearings are done, and we have to submit briefs to the court by August 17th. So we'll all be submitting 50-page briefs. The judge then will render a decision, which will then be sent. He can't throw it out. His only role is, as a judge, is to do fact-finding and make recommendations to the DEA. We went into this assuming that we were going to lose, and that we would have to go to the Federal Court of Appeals. So everything we have done is to prepare the record for that appeal. Now, we may get lucky, and this judge, he seems like he's an honorable man to me. He did a very nice job at the trial. He was very fair, even-handed. He appeared to be ethical, but we don't know what he's going to do. But even if he comes in 100% on our side, the head of the DEA, whose boss is the Attorney General, whose boss is President Trump, can overrule it. And then that becomes the final agency decision, and then we go back to the Federal Court of Appeals. We are prepared for that. We are funded for that. We have been preparing for an uphill fight to get us into the Court of Appeals. They are very good at denying presidential overreach, which this is a clear case of that. If they are halfway fair to us, we should win. Our evidence is overwhelming. But, you know, judges on the lower level are, with a Medicare lawsuit, the judge originally turned that out, saying we didn't have standing, but he was appointed by Trump. And he violated the law in rendering this decision. He was supposed to give us favorable inferences at this stage of the litigation, and he didn't do it. So we have now filed an appeal against him. If you read his opinion, he went out of the way to rule against us. So we're going to go to the Court of Appeals and say, look, he was supposed to do this. At this stage of litigation, he didn't do it. He violated the law, come in our favor and send it back down for trial. So that's where we're at with all of that. On the state level, we've had some judges that are reluctant to rule against the marijuana industry. And because the states are getting so much income from it,
right.
A lot of these judges are political appointees. We ran into a judge in Highland Park. I talked about that earlier, where the judge, we had a lawsuit going there. The judge would not allow us to conduct any discovery. I could not issue subpoenas. I could not do depositions. The fact that the DWIs went up 56% in the town, he would not allow me to get a look at those DWI reports. And I said, well, Your Honor, you know, the marijuana stores come in, DUI is up 56%. We want to see if cannabis was involved. And he said, well, do you have any proof that cannabis was involved? And we said, no, Your Honor, because we haven't been able to look at the reports yet.
We can't get there
he
from
said,
here.
Well, you got to have some showing that cannabis was involved. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that he was doing.
Wow.
And we withdrew the lawsuit. He was corrupt.
Obviously.
I was not allowed to do anything that a lawyer normally can do. I couldn't conduct depositions. I couldn't get written discovery, nothing. He just completely slammed down the case. And I told the client, look, we have all this stuff coming up in the federal level. I cannot screw around with this judge. We had to back out of the case. We've had that situation in some other states where they rule against us on some of these procedural things, and they give absolutely bullshit reasons for doing it. So we've appealed some of them now. Matter of fact, we've appealed everything except that New Jersey case. Not uncommon with these types of cases where states are getting revenue. Judges are political appointees in those states. They don't want to upset the politicians, and so they find a way of ducking out of it. The most convenient way is to say that you didn't have standing. You didn't have a right to file a lawsuit, because those decisions are very subjective. One judge says, well, you know, you've been damaged a dollar. I think you have standing. Another judge will say, well, you only were damaged $100,000. I don't think you have standing. So that's what we're going through. The tobacco lawsuits went through the same types of problems. In North Carolina, it was considered patriotic to smoke cigarettes.
It's not just because you said a bad word either. We really legitimately hit the time. Although, okay. I've never seen Alex move that fast.
What, Alex. What bad word?
Well, the one I can't say right now.
Okay.
It was kind of funny, though.
Well, anyway, I'm sorry.
No. Oh, we liked it. It was funny. We like watching Alex panic in there.
Right.
Thank you so much. We look forward to touching base with you again.
I give power and thanks to your little steamboat. You're doing a terrific job, and you're a very powerful steamboat doing good work, and keep it up.
Thank you.
Three cheers for the tugboats.
Woohoo!
All right. We're out.
That justice is the one thing you should always find. You got to saddle up your boys. You got to draw a hard line. When the gun smoke settles, we'll sing a victory tune, and we'll all meet back at the local saloon. We'll raise up our glasses against evil forces, singing whiskey for my men, beer for my horses.